2 weeks ago today. The entertainment industry lost a giant in film criticism, and to many in Champaign-Urbana, Chicago, and many other places around the country, a dear friend. Urbana native and University of Illinois graduate Roger Ebert, who had battled cancer for several years, passed away at the age of 70. This week, his 15th annual film festival carries on in Champaign for the first time without him. I'm Jeff Bossert. This morning on Focus, we'll spend an hour honoring Ebert's legacy. We'll be joined by Chicago Tribune critic Michael Phillips, one of those who took over on TV's At the Movies when Ebert's health declined. We'll also hear from some of Roger's friends from his days growing up in Champaign-Urbana, and we'll hear a bit from Chaz Ebert as his wife spoke from the podium last night at the Virginia Theater as Ebert Fest got underway. We'd love to hear your memories of Roger Ebert, whether it was something he'd done on TV or written or something from the last 14 years of Ebert Fest. Over the next hour, remembering Roger Ebert. We'll take your comments and questions in 5 minutes after this hour's news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert. 2 weeks ago today, Urbana native Roger Ebert passed away at the age of 70. And last night, the 15th annual Ebert Fest opened for the first time without him. But the mood wasn't melancholy at the Virginia Theater. His wife, Chaz Ebert, spoke from the podium last night, thanking the audience for their support since the festival started in 1999.
I am so happy to be with you this evening. I was hoping that, you know, I always called Roger my boyfriend. I was hoping that my boyfriend would be here with me, and he's not, so I wore his scarf tonight. I'm going to, you know, I can be a loose cannon sometimes, so I'm going to stick more closely to the script, because I don't know where I would go if I didn't tonight. Well, I'm going to deviate from it for just a second. Because I just want to say thank you. The 15 years of this film festival have been so meaningful to me and to Roger. You gave Roger so much joy coming here year after year to the festival at his alma mater, in his hometown. It made him so happy. And he wanted to make sure that the festival continues. And so we'll see what we can do about that. But tonight, this week, for the next 5 days, we're going to celebrate Roger. I have only one more thing that's not on the script. Thank you for giving me some place to go today. Thank you. I needed this.
We just heard from Chaz Ebert, part of her opening remarks at last night's opening of Ebert Fest at the Virginia Theater. Joining us today to discuss Ebert's life and legacy is Michael Phillips, film critic for the Chicago Tribune and former co-host of TV's At the Movies across the last 20-plus years. He's also been the drama critic of the Dallas Times-Herald, San Diego Union Tribune, and St. Paul Pioneer Press, also the L.A. Times. Good morning, Michael Phillips.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's been a sad couple of weeks, but hearing the crowd in the clips you just played, I can't wait to get down there. I'm coming down tonight and introducing a film tomorrow, Friday, and doing a Q&A. But it is going to be a celebration. The guy was, Roger was just too, he was such a fount of goodwill and good cinema. It's hard to be sad.
And you had said that. Just want to let people know that you can call in 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We're remembering Roger Ebert this morning on Focus. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. But, Michael, you had said that the comments you made in a short interview, I believe it was the day of the funeral, you were done being sad and it was time to celebrate this man's life and be happy that you were a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, easy for me to say. It's you know, Chicago in particular is it's full of hundreds, probably thousands of people who knew Roger longer and maybe better than I did. My own experience was different. I only knew him for a year or two before he lost his power of speech. But of course we know that he didn't lose his power of speech. He just found a different way to be heard. And it was through the way he had always knew he could be heard most eloquently, which is, you know, behind a keyboard. And I don't know. It really. My story is just is the same as a million other stories like that. He was a bit of a mentor, a bit of a bit of a kind of a beneficent uncle in some ways to so many of us. You know, he helped me get on TV, you know, mainly because he wasn't well enough to do it himself. It's really that plus, you know, being just a really good colleague and champion. He I'll tell you, he saved my behind the first year I went to the Cannes Film Festival. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was sleep deprived. I didn't know which screenings I should be. I didn't know which schedule to be following. I didn't know where anything was. And he just took me aside and said, "Let me introduce you to a few people. Here's who you got to know to make sure you get your screenings taken care of." Da 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 da. And this was from a competitor.
You know, how much of that comes from the fact that he was kind of a little bit of the old school, where you think back to like Pauline Kael and names like that, that made film criticism this important thing, and doing more than a snippet saying this movie was good, this movie was bad.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think maybe like Pauline Kael, though I think temperamentally he was so different from Kael, who he knew a little bit, but maybe like Pauline Kael, he certainly had enough influence and star power to kind of generate a whole constellation of acolytes and you know, and friends and, you know, junior members of the Critics League coming up. My own resume was a little more peculiar than most in that regard. I was doing theater most of my professional career, although I started out doing film in my 20s, and like A.O. Scott of the New York Times, who was rather late to film criticism as a beat, in his case for the New York Times. And Roger was a little skeptical at first about guys like me and Tony coming in from what seemed to be left field. And then he really gave you a fair shake, as John Cusack said of Roger at the Thursday Memorial at the Chicago Theater. You know, Roger liked the movie, don't like the movie. Gave it a fair shake. You felt like he wasn't talking in code, or he didn't have an agenda when he did or didn't like something, and that's the key, I think, to writing the kind of reviews and all the other kinds of writing he did that just allow these things. That's what allows people to kind of feel like they're getting to know somebody behind the byline.
Well, was your first interaction, as you prepared to replace him on TV, or was it just at a film screening? How did you
first
get to
know
him?
No, before that, because I was made film critic back in 05, 06. And so, you know, this is not a very big room, the Lake Street screening room in the Loop in downtown Chicago, which is where most of a large number of the screenings are seen. But he was extended his hand and his help right away. And I think he saw that I was taking, you know, the job seriously, and I did my homework, and I knew a few things, and you know, in that regard, he was a champion from early on, and then just a few months later, after, you know, that first film festival, where I really got to know him a little better, you know, that's when the first surgeries came along, and he lost his voice, and then with Richard Roper, a lot of people were coming and going on the show as co-hosts, and then eventually I got a little more work, and eventually A.O. Scott and I became the two alternates, and then we got our own season a couple of years later, and it's all because of Roger, you know, and no one was happier than Roger when Tony and I, you know, got the word for the final season on the show, because he felt like after some maybe ill-advised experiments about who could co-host the show at the movies, you know, they went back to the roots a little bit, just got a couple of different sorts of newspaper critics to mix it up. And I think maybe also in the spirit of Roger and Gene, Tony and I were, we were able to get by on television without seeming like television personalities. You know, none of us would have been mistaken for TV weathermen or anchormen.
Well, did you feel a fair amount of pressure? I mean, I know there are others that came on TV before you, namely Richard Roper, when we lost Gene Siskel, but the try to fill those shoes and have a debate about a particular movie that you and whoever was co-hosting with you had, you know, disagreed with.
Yeah, I mean, it was Richard was the anchor there. I mean, he was the through line through it all, and he was a very instructive guy to mix it up with, because he just by example, and he was a good colleague as well, and still is. He let you, you know, you'd have to kind of, okay, you have 2 minutes. What is the one thing you must say about this film? And what is the one thing that the other person just said that you have to respond to? And that's all the time you have on television. That's so different from what we enjoy as we sit behind the keyboard, and whether or not we have endless amounts of room to write about a film or a limited amount of room. You know, yeah, television is a whole different beast. It's not even really like the same agenda at all. You have to find a way to seem yourself on television in a conversational way, but you really can't be complete or it's not like you have the last word on something. You just have to have one good thing to say that's going to provoke the other person into saying something else. That's what I learned from watching Roger and Gene.
We'd love to hear from you, memories of Roger Ebert, whether it was something you saw on TV or read or interaction at Ebertfest the last 14 years. You can take your calls around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, or outlying area, 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach us on Facebook and Twitter. Talk about your experience coming down and to Ebertfest, Michael, and maybe the Roger Ebert you got to know from his Champaign-Urbana roots compared to the one you already knew as a Chicago film critic.
That is, I mean, the first time I went down there, I'd heard about it for years, you know, and it sounded like great fun and you know, just always kind of a hometown hero, you know, vibe. What I wasn't prepared for was just how fantastic the audiences are, not just because they turn out and not just because a lot of them knew Roger and have been following, you know, the films and the film festival and Roger for a long, long time. But it's just a fantastic experience to see a good movie in a really good print or good projection on the screen at the Virginia Theater. It's just one of the best places in the state of Illinois and probably the Midwest to experience the kind of vanishing legacy of watching a movie with hundreds of other people around you. Now, I mean, I don't think that's ever going to go away. You know, people say, well, everyone's watching on their iPhones now. Aren't we doomed for that sort of isolated, you know, personalized viewing in your home, in your whatever, on the L, you know, maybe. But at the same time, the numbers for exhibition experiences, like even just something like the IMAX theater, they're really strong. I think people want to get out of the house, and they like seeing a movie communally, you know, as Roger once said, awake in the dark. And Ebertfest is a fantastic place to do that. It's just great audiences. I love it. I can't wait to get back down there.
Look forward to having you. Were there any movies, either something that wasn't well received or exposed at first, like an Ebertfest type film or a classic film, movies that you went back and looked at a second time based on the rave reviews that Roger gave them?
I mean, Roger was famously a really enthusiastic and generous critic, and these are traits that we should all keep in touch with. He loved more films in a given year than most of the rest of his colleagues. And he used to, you know, he'd even written about that a few times, because I think he was feeling a little self-conscious about it maybe in the last decade of his career, where he'd say, well, now why is that? Why do I turn out more 3.5 and 4-star level reviews than most of my colleagues? You know, and he liked to look at it just like, well, I'm a cheerful sort of guy. I think that was the word he used. Maybe I'm, you know, it was his way of explaining that it's not that I'm easy to please, it's just that I'm temperamentally open to more than you all, you know. And that was, in a way, it was sort of a needle at some of his colleagues, but I love the way he put that. And at Eberfest, I've films I hadn't seen for a long time, even films I love but have problems with in some way or another, like Apocalypse Now. When you see Apocalypse Now with 700 people, half of whom have never seen it, and maybe the other half have never seen it projected the way they saw it down at the Virginia Theater, I'm sorry, but the experience just becomes something else. You still have your individualized reaction and your opinions, and a lot of them are maybe contradictory. You love certain things about it. I've always had a problem with the last half hour, Apocalypse Now, whatever. But just as a experiential viewing phenomenon, it was overwhelming. And, you know, I mean, thanks to Roger, I had that opportunity.
We'd love to hear from you talking about Roger Ebert this morning and his memories, whether we have memories from film reviews or Ebert Fest or anything else he had done. 800-222-9455 or 333-9455. Did that relationship with Roger just pick up where he left off, even when he lost his voice, through emails? I'm wondering if he sent you notes about...
Lots, man. I'll tell you, you know, people have been saying this all for the last 2 weeks, just about, I wish I had saved, you know, the note when he said, I wish I had saved every single note he scratched off, you know, in the screening room. I mean, some of them were hilarious, just simple rejoinders to something somebody just said. You know, some of them very, very kind, just personal notes of thanks or appreciation on, you know, on more private matters. And I mean, just wonderful. And why I didn't save them, I don't know why. But I knew him best, and I really only got to know him well after he lost his voice, which makes me sad. It does make me sad. It's a very bittersweet to get to know somebody. But he said, and Chaz has been saying this too, thanks to the doctors he had, he got another 7 years that he might not have otherwise gotten. And when I heard that figure, I mean, I've known him. I only knew him for 7 years. So, I mean, thank God that the doctors did what they did to at least buy him those years. And did anybody, I mean, you tell me, have you heard of anybody who used that amount of time more wisely and more fully than Roger Ebert? I mean, he just seized the day.
No, I mean, and I have probably five or six of those movie home companion books, and I just, the effort he put into, at any point in his career, to write about any movie, and to tweet things out, obviously, later, and they weren't always about movies. I mean, did you two discuss anything besides film?
Oh, yeah, we had, I remember a wonderful dinner party at, my friend and Tribune colleague, Monica Eng, who's known Roger her whole life. I mean, she started the Sun-Times when she was, I think, 15 or 16, and that was because Roger got the job. And, they've been, you know, they were family friends for forever. A dinner party where he loved opening up with, what have you read lately that you really loved? I mean, he loved asking that question. And that was a wonderful way to start any conversation at a dinner party. And, you know, there's a lot of stories about just kind of how, what a raconteur he was and how he'd maybe in some ways dominated a conversation because he was typically the most interesting guy in the room, you know. But he wasn't one of those exhausting blowhards who use their celebrity or their encyclopedic knowledge to just kind of take over and suck the air out of a room. He was such a genial, curious guy, curious in the way of just constant curiosity. And and you know what? He was the same good company a couple of years later. You know, I remember going to a dinner over at Chaz and Roger's townhouse in Lincoln Park, and, you know, his communication was just simply different. You know, he would write, he would communicate, sometimes he would type, but it was the same presence, the same warm, intelligent presence.
We'd love to hear from you, memories of Roger Ebert. Did you enjoy his criticism, commentary? Did he change the way you think about movies? Maybe he introduced you to it. Give us a call, or if you knew Roger Ebert, we'd love to hear from you. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We had a couple of comments sent in early promoting this show. We'll go to one from Susan. She said, many years back, Roger was teasing me about my interest in unsavory gossip of Hollywood's golden years. Who was married and who was not. And she said she told him that I was Hedda Hopper reincarnated. And he pointed out that as Hopper was still alive when she was born, pretty much blasting that theory out of the water. A few years later, I attended a book signing for Roger, and when I got home, I found the inscription, "To Hedda." My friend said, "He doesn't even know who you are," but I knew better. Needless to say, I treasure that book, and the book was the one I hated, that movie, one of his famous ones.
Yeah, I mean, why would a guy like that even take the time to do that? Because he wouldn't think not to. He just loved making connections with people. And again, it just wasn't ever because of anything other than just pure, good-hearted, and humane need to communicate and just hear what people have to say. There's for every story like that, there's a thousand more.
I want to thank Susan Wright for that email. And Joyce has a call on line one in Champaign. Joyce, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling about Roger. He was in my class. We graduated together. I just feel very blessed that he was in my life, and my heart goes out to everybody that knows him. We just can't say enough about him. And he will be missed, but he will never be gone from any of our lives. And it was an honor and a blessing. And I thank you so much for sharing, letting everybody share their thoughts also. And I want to thank the station and especially his family for sharing him. And that's about all I have to say. I thank you so much.
Thanks, Joyce, for the call. And we do want to point out that we're honoring Roger Ebert's memory tonight as well on WYLL-TV. We'll be using archived interview material we have at 8 p.m. We'd love to hear from you about Roger Ebert. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We've got another one of those fellow high school students on the phone. Steve Shoemaker is on line two. Thanks, Steve, for joining us.
Happy to join you, Jeff. I was thinking about how good Roger was to come back to high school reunions. I'm sure a lot of very famous and wealthy people forget about their time in their hometown and high school, but Roger always came back. Now, of course, he was the senior class president when he graduated from Banna High School in 1960. But I remember when he last was the MC for the reunion of Banna High School class of 1960, and he was always asked by the committee to be the MC, and because he was so witty and remembered so much and remembered people and didn't forget his friends. And then, of course, after he lost his voice, he couldn't do that again. At the last reunion, but he was still there, and they had to get him a special chair to sit in because of his severe cancer problems. But he was there, and he even took a tour on a bus around to see the old site in Urbana and the Princess Theater, where he first started seeing movies like Dean Autry and things like that on Saturday mornings for a dime. And it was interesting having him on the bus tour. He and Chaz sat right up in front, and he couldn't talk, but he would type in his laptop, and the computer would speak, or Chaz would read what he said, and he'd be making comments about places we went by, the old Tiger's Den where the students hung out and places like that. It was he was always good to just remember people and care about his hometown.
Probably just a remarkable historical tour guide to have him along with you, and you can go back so many years and just looking and remembering what things looked like in the town back then.
When Roger and my wife Nadja, they were in the same class, and I was the class behind them at Urbana. But when we were there, there was only one African-American teacher in all of Urbana High School, Taylor Thomas, who taught history. He later went on to become a assistant superintendent of schools and very well known in the community. And I remember we made one of the stops we had on our bus tour was the Taylor Thomas subdivision, which is now in Champaign. And it was interesting to see how times have changed, because when Taylor was a teacher at Urbana High School, he wasn't allowed to live in the neighborhood where he and his wife wanted to buy a house. They had to live outside of town. So there have been some very important changes over the decades.
Steve, thanks so much for calling in today. I appreciate
You're welcome.
It. We'd love to hear your comments, questions, memories of Roger Ebert, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. I want to go back to our guest, Michael Phillips, briefly. I mean, have you been able to do any of that kind of driving around Champaign-Urbana and understanding Ebert's mark on the community, or he went to high school and things like that?
I have. A little bit. I mean, I've seen a little more and more of Champaign-Urbana each time I've been down for Ebertfest, and depending on how much time I have. And a lot of it, every town in America has its own byways and stories to tell and personalities. And it's not the same as where I grew up, Racine, Wisconsin. But it's also, there are some similarities in that when you get a medium-sized town in the Midwest, and if you grew up at a certain time, I'm a little younger than Roger, but if you grew up at a certain time, you have that sense of what you're always going to miss about it, but also what, as the caller just said, what needs changing, and where history and the social forces at play are going to push us. And Roger, that's the great thing about his writing. He really, people look to him as kind of a civic conscience, and he was in many ways a voice of Champaign-Urbana. He was certainly in Chicago journalism. He was the great civic conscience of the local newspapers. And he could write about Macy's taking over Marshall Fields. He could write about climate change. He could write about the election. He could write about the media. He could write about gun control. And a lot of people did say, hey, stick to movies. What's all this about? But his best reviews took on so much of the world at large, and so naturally, just because the movies are a way of having a conversation about the entire world and what matters to us. Nobody knew that better than him.
We're going to pause here for a short break, and we'll have more calls from memories of Roger Ebert. We'll even hear from Ebert himself from an interview from a while back. We're pausing for a short break here. I'm Jeff Bostert. This is Focus. You're listening to Focus. I'm Jeff Bostert, and we're talking about your memories of Roger Ebert this morning. You can join us at 800-222-9455 or 333-9455. You can also send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. We're joined by Michael Phillips, film critic for the Chicago Tribune. And before we get to we have another guest on the line, but we're going to hear first from Roger himself. This is from a 1995 interview on WILL TV. Roger, of course, started up a film fest 15 years ago. It started up last night, and he's going to tell us a bit why it's so important to see a film in a theater.
People today, I think, believe that they have seen a movie if they look at it on video. Now, I love home video. I watch home video a lot. But there is no substitution for light shining through celluloid on a screen with an audience in attendance, because the experience of seeing a movie in a great theater with a good audience cannot be duplicated any other way. In the theater, the picture is big, the sound surrounds us, we lose contact with our environment, and we have a voyeuristic, escapist experience. Mm-hmm. At home, we control. We are the projectionist. We're the exhibitionist. Or the exhibitor, I think. Might be a better
exhibitor,
word. Yes, yes, that's a better word. And our attention is often distracted so that the movie itself becomes fragmented. I think it would be good if people could see movies for the first time in a movie theater, at least good movies.
Sure. That was Roger Ebert from the 1995 interview. And reminder of the program Ebert Remembered at 8 p.m. on WILL-TV. We'll hear larger portions and see larger portions of that interview. We've had a caller on the line for a while. Blake is on line one to join us and talk about his memories of Roger Ebert. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to call and say that the clip you just played of Roger's voice pretty much sums up where my story was going to head. I worked for the Daily Illini from about 2005 until 2008 when I graduated, and I was the entertainment editor there. It was a department that had been kind of defunct, and then I helped rebuild it over the course of those 3 years. But my first ever interview, the first thing I ever did was call Roger and talk to him about the upcoming Ebert Fest that year. I think we it took us like 7 or 8 tries via email to get scheduled because he was very busy, obviously getting ready for the festival, his own workload with the Sun-Times, and his health had somewhat become a concern at that point. But he was very patient about it. Obviously I was a student, so I had class and couldn't just do it at any time. But once we finally got to talking, I'm pretty sure we knocked out my actual interview, everything I needed from him for the story, within the first 5 minutes. And then we ended up just sitting there chatting for about 45 minutes over the phone about movies. And pretty much from that point on, I decided that I was going to stick with film and radio in some aspect of my life. And I kind of became a critic. I was a critic for the Daily Illini at that point in time. But then I sort of became a critic in Peoria, Illinois, where I work now. And you know what? Ebert Fest has provided me with so many opportunities, and Michael mentioned this earlier with like Apocalypse Now, to see films the way they were meant to be seen and to experience films the way they were meant to be experienced. I owe everything of that as a movie lover, as a film lover, to Roger Ebert. And I know that there's a lot of people that sit in that Virginia theater with me every night when Ebert Fest is going on and experience the same thing. This is my 9th Ebert Fest, and I make sure that I have vacation time from any job I have so that I can come back and experience this every year. So I was very, very devastated to hear about his passing, but I know that, you know, watching the movies with him in mind, it gives me peace of mind and just reinvigorates me every time, you know, credits roll or I should say opening titles roll. So that was pretty much all I wanted to share. I appreciate the time. So thank
Blake,
you.
Blake, thank you for the call. Any response, Michael Phillips?
I love that phrase Blake just used about something about Ebert Fest that does instill peace of mind in a movie lover. Even now. Even this year, when Roger's not here, just knowing it's there and knowing that he's the one who, you know, this is his idea. It was a very simple and a very good idea, and the idea that you would just gather people together around movies that Roger loved, and you know, the idea that it was overlooked and maybe underappreciated in some ways, but you know, even that. That needn't be the focus of this thing. It's just to be movies that you want to see on a big screen. I mean, I love seeing. I won't get a chance this year, unfortunately, but I love seeing the silent film features with the Alloy Orchestra or some other live accompaniment at the Virginia as part of Ebert Fest. I mean, I was on the panels for Sadie Thompson and The Last Command, and these are. I mean, talk about. Journey back in time. I mean, it is not easy to see that kind of movie projected properly and really talked about so brilliantly by people on the panel like David Bordwell and Kristen Thompson. And I don't know, I'm it's very easy to just geek out on the whole experience because it's for movie lovers by movie lovers. I like the peace of mind idea. It gives me peace of mind just knowing I'll be down there tonight.
Got a couple of callers waiting. Mike is on line two in Champaign. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just wanted to share a couple thoughts that I had. I am a person who enjoys movies a lot. I'm not a a really knowledgeable or broad, you know, I don't have a broad knowledge of movies in general, but I just like movies. And I was trying to think of why did I continue to tend to gravitate towards Roger's reviews, even though I didn't always, I couldn't depend on them 100% for it to be something that I would like, if he liked them necessarily. But I thought of a couple things. One was that I also grew up in town, and I think maybe being nurtured by the Steak and Shake environments, Steak and Shake environment created a kinship there, number one. And number two, I thought that he, regardless of how technical his reviews might have gotten, and with mentions of many things that I had no idea really what he was talking about in terms of the director's intentions and the writer and the actor's approach and technique and so forth, he never seemed to talk down to the average moviegoer who just liked movies. And I always felt I could read through his review and learn something, or I felt like there was probably something there that I could pick up a little something that that I would appreciate and would enjoy about that. So kind of a his approach to just the average reader, I thought, was really spectacular. So just want to share that. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Well, welcome Linda to the conversation from Urbana on line one. Go ahead.
Born and raised here, graduate of Urbana High School, 1 year behind Roger, graduate University of Illinois, 1 year behind Roger, went to the Princess Theater just like he did. And the thing that means the most to me is that he always came back home and made a difference here. And in particular, I am just so pleased at all the work that's been done on the Virginia Theater itself and keeping it going and making it the special place that it is and choosing it for his festival. It just means a great deal. He never forgot us, and he always came back and was a part of all of it.
Appreciate the call. I know we've had a lot of comments about memories of Roger and people who knew him, but Michael, anything else that comes to mind from these comments?
I guess seeing him, the thing I most appreciate is the chance to see him on the job in the sort of the least glamorous part of the job. It's a wonderful job to be able to write about film for a living. It's just a privilege. But just to kind of see how he would talk and listen before and after his powers of speech were his in that screening room in the Loop. It was just kind of wonderful to see what kind of audience member he was. You know, just always appreciated a good joke, and always had two more at the ready, right behind yours. And I don't know. It's everybody misses him. I miss him, and I'm just glad that we can all remember him and appreciate what he stood for this weekend at the Virginia.
We'd love to hear from you. We got a few minutes left to remember Roger Ebert this morning on Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert, and we're talking with Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. A couple of callers ago, we heard the mention of Steak and Shake, and I actually live fairly close to his childhood home on Washington Street in Urbana, and a couple of Steak and Shake bags were placed out there outside where that little plaque is in front of his home a couple of days after he had passed. One of the comments that I heard from that memorial, and I was happy to see a lot of it online from the Chicago Theater last week, was Richard Roper got up there and told a couple of jokes, and then he got pretty serious. And I think the thing that got to me was when he said, "Roger was our George Bailey," and hearkening the character from It's a Wonderful Life, and maybe helping people become better people because we knew him, and maybe help people see things that they didn't see in themselves.
Yeah, that's good. I talked to Richard about that afterwards, actually, and I mean, the only thing that might complicate that a little bit, I guess, is that George never left town. Roger somehow managed to never leave town, but also see the world 15 times over. He became such a avid world citizen and world traveler, and just delighted in so many different, you know, so many different pursuits and worldwide travels. And yet he didn't, you know, he made time to come back. He didn't come back for show. You know, he came back because he loved it. And if we're really, none of us are anything without some sort of connection to our pasts, however we feel about how we grew up or where we grew up. Roger happened to love his, and he was always, I mean, the whole idea of Ebertfest is kind of establishing this annual celebration in his hometown, built around everything he loved, surrounded by hundreds, thousands of people who loved it as much as he did. And that really is a wonderful life.
Line four from Indiana, Thomas Cohen. Go ahead.
Just want to say how much I enjoyed Roger. I just can't tell you. It's a pleasure to be able to say something about him.
And for Zenny, Z-E-N-N-I-E.
And what I'd like to say is he picked a perfect partner in Siskel, in Gene Siskel, to do the reviews. If one or the other was a little off, the other one always hit it right on. You know, I really liked it a lot. And I, you know, they read his book at Indiana University during noontime, Roger's book. Enjoyed listening to it.
Thanks for the call. And you talked about, he mentioned Gene Siskel. And I think Siskel's widow spoke also that evening, the other night at the Chicago Theater, and talked about how the two of them did not like each other at first.
And I think that was actually kind of a great dose of reality in what tends to, anytime somebody of this magnitude dies, a lot of really heartfelt and wonderful things are said, and some of it tends to drift into the realm of myth maybe or sentimentality. And then Marlene Siskel, I think, reminded people that these guys really, really were fierce competitors at their respective newspapers. They really didn't like each other in some ways at first, and it was a very kind of combustible, brotherly type relationship. It's a little more complicated than the fact that, like, they fought like cats and dogs, but they loved each other. I think from what I can tell and from what I've heard, it's a little more like they fought like cats and dogs, they loved each other, but it was a very complicated sort of brotherly relationship. And my God, it sure played on television. I mean, when those arguments really took flight, it was just great. It was just a great discussion about the movies, especially when you had two big egos duking it out like that. I don't know. You don't get that kind of luck very often where you get the right pairing of people on television.
Well, another thing that when I think of Siskel and Ebert is that Roger talked about Siskel being very private about his health problems and doing a TV program about 3 weeks before his passing, and that helping Roger determine he wanted to be very open and said, you know, this is how I look after he had jaw surgery, and I'm going to be open with it.
Yeah, that was such an inspiration. I mean, that's one of the great gifts he gave to so many people who were no matter what their health situation, health crises, whatever. Just to have a guy say, okay, this is how I look. I'm not hiding it. I'm working with it the best I can. I'm going to write my way through this thing, and with your help, meaning, you know, all of us who read him, I'll make the most of it. I believe truly, and I'm sure Chaz believes the same thing, that bought him a lot of that extra time, just because he had such a good the right attitude about it. And we can't be ashamed about how we look. We can't. It's too, you know, it's life's too short. And as Roger, everything Roger ever kind of stood for, and whatever he told me about, say here's how to, you know, here's how you can work toward being effective on television. just, you know, don't try to be anybody else. You are who you are, and just make the best case for who you are. And he, every day of his life, he made a good case for who he was.
We've got another caller on the line. Joanne is calling from Tolono. Line two, go ahead.
Hello, Adanya. This is Joanne Hustleman Smith. I knew Roger in his high school days, and as a member of St. Patrick's Tolono, he had an option to come to our home for religion class, because we offered an alternative to the conventional classes where you discuss. And so what we did in our classes, we discussed current events in the light of articles, say, in Time magazine, and reviewed them and discussed them in the light of ethics and theology. And Roger was an eager participant. Michener was his idol, and his goal, he told us, was to write a great American novel and win a Pulitzer Prize. So we followed Roger on TV and his activities and all through the years, and we loved watching his reviews. And so when he wrote his book, he had won the Pulitzer Prize, of course, not for the great American novel, but when he published his book, A Kiss is Still a Kiss, we saw him, and he autographed the book for us, and he said, "See you at the movies, Roger Ebert, 11-84. So we loved watching him and following him, and we feel we've lost a caring friend. And he made a valuable contribution to society with his writings and TV, and who knows, maybe a little of his compassion and caring came from his earlier upbringing and maybe even influence of his coming to our house. Who knows? So I think he was a wonderful person, and we will miss him and what he had to contribute. And actually, he'll never be forgotten.
Thanks for the call. My experience with Roger Ebert, we did not ever meet, but I produced a story on him last year on about his 70th birthday and learned a lot about Roger Ebert, the journalist, and specifically one story that came from Dave Reed, who worked with him at the Daily Illini and at the Sun-Times, was the coverage of the John F. Kennedy assassination when they were both working here on campus. But I'm sure, Michael, you've probably had conversations or email conversations about news stories or breaking news or just Roger's thoughts on politics or things like that.
Yeah, he was, well, and that's a legendary story. I mean, he really put that together so quickly, and I know Bill Nack always talks about just how beautifully he responded to the JFK assassination as a, and I think he was still in his teen years at that point, at the student paper. I mean, that's amazing to me. I love the fact that he opened up on the blog to so many different subjects that may or may not have anything to do with what he was reviewing that week. And it's just life. The world is. He saw the movies as a way of dealing and figuring out what our place is in the world. And that's when you have that kind of worldview, as the caller just mentioned. When you're really kind of truly interested in ethics and theology and current events and all that, you know, that's great. Great foundation for any kind of critical writing, critical thinking, and also just kind of the kind of humanist he was. He was a true humanist, and that doesn't have anything to do with politics. In fact, that just has to do with being human.
Well, another the comment that just come up about Bill Nack, and you know, as a sports editor at the DI when Roger was here, and my memory of Roger dealing with sports was broadcast of Bulls games and Siskel and Ebert sitting there at courtside.
Yeah. Siskel loved going to the Bulls, and you know, Roger enjoyed it. I think Gene didn't, you know, had his own strengths and personality as a film critic. I didn't know Gene, but Roger was a different sort of critic. He was voracious in terms of knowledge and research, and Gene was a little more of a smart guy who may or may not take that extra two hours to see a different film by the same filmmaker if he had Bulls tickets that night. I'm afraid I'm running out of juice here.
Oh, I am sorry about that. We've got to wrap this up fairly quickly. Anyway, any final thoughts? And
no,
when will we expect you down here for Ebert Fest?
I'm coming down tonight for Bernie. So and I hope people can come see Oslo August 31st, tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Roger picked it. I love that movie as much as he did. Nobody knows it, and they're bringing in the guy from Oslo, Norway, to talk about it.
Well, Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune, thank you so much, and we loved having you down here for Ebert Fest. Hope to have you at future festivals.
All the best. Hey, really appreciate it, Jeff.
All right. Thank you. And we welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program, Memories of Roger Ebert. And don't forget, Ebert Remembered at 8 p.m. tonight on WILL-TV. And we have archives from interviews with Roger Ebert he did on this TV station. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Other members of the Focus team are Pam Dempsey and Kimberly Cronick. Jason Croft is our technical director and handles your calls. We welcome additional thoughts you have at will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bostert. This is Focus.